It's Tuesday, the day we read from your emails and web comments. Our program about military spouses and their changing roles sent many of you to your keyboard. From Charity Lander in Kansas, we had this email. I am a military spouse and a doctoral student. My first priority is making sure my husband is okay and has the support he needs to be successful. Beyond that, I see my role as being a face of a community I feel most Americans don't really understand anymore. There is a huge disconnect about the amount of stress military families are under and what it takes to be successful as a professional while navigating the stresses of military life. I hope that my interactions with the academic community help change some of the stereotypes about military families and give us the help we need to succeed. Mary Rowley was very unhappy with the response to a question about gay and lesbian families in the military. She wrote, "Your guest dismissed an entire brave, patriotic group of men and women when she said that the issue is out of her scope. Does she think that gays and lesbians don't have families or spouses that need support while their soldier is away? Once again, someone summarily denying our basic humanity." We marked the 20th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act last week. Erica Schatzline in Minnesota wrote, "My father is a paraplegic and uses a wheelchair, so the ADA has made a huge difference for our entire family. However, he taught me that the ADA laws are not the ideal, but a bare minimum. Many buildings built to ADA guidelines still have numerous barriers to easy access and full use for people with physical or visual impairment. This anniversary is a time to celebrate, but also a time to look ahead and see how we can continue to evolve in our inclusion of all people in public life." Karen Slocum in Texas was amused by our discussion about information on the internet that never goes away. "Obviously, none of you have ever lived in a small town," she wrote. "Nothing is ever forgotten. Everyone knows you and your family. When we moved back to my hometown from Colorado, I was immediately recognized as Dick and Hazel's daughter. It does make you stop and think before you do something because, like it or not, your parents will know before you get home, no matter how old you are." Finally, we ask writers and poets to tell us why you write. This email from Lynn Jacobs in California summed up the sentiments of many of our listeners. "I write because I can't not write. Mostly I write to figure out what I'm thinking about. Thoughts build up in me and I have to sort them out. I write in my blog because I like to hear what others think about what I have to say. For me, writing is communication with myself and others. It is painful and rewarding and exhausting and exhilarating. I can't imagine living without writing." If you have comments, questions, or corrections for us, the best way to reach us is by email. Our email address is talk@npr.org. Please let us know where you're writing from and give us some help on how to pronounce your name. And before we say goodbye, one more word about Mitch Miller. It comes in this email. It wasn't Looney Tunes that had the bouncing ball, but it was Betty Boop. Max Fleischer cartoons, among their stars appearing was Ethel Merman and Louis Armstrong. Thank you, Lance, very much from Sand Springs, Oklahoma, for that. Talk of the Nation is produced by John Asante, April Failing, Dahlia Martinez, Ben Timshin, Abdul Ali, Sarah Handel. Sarah also handles our web content. Our editor is Scott Cameron. Our intern is Jalen Classic. Gwen Uten directs the program. Drew Reynolds is our technical director. He gets engineering help from Dennis Nielsen, Burke Hun, and Neil Ellis. Talk of the Nation's theme music was composed by Greg Smith. Talk of the Nation's supervising senior producer is Carlene Watson. Sue Goodwin is the executive producer. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Tony Cox in Washington.